Peter Hoffrey had been scheduled for this talk, but unfortunately he cannot come. So I will mainly talk the one observational result which we have done with using Subaru telescope. And I'm not their observer, so if there are serious observational questions, then the Masaomi Tanaka will help us. And the type 1 supernova, which we have observed, is this O3DU and O3HV, but at day 300 and 400. And it's very late phase, and and our results actually have been published in these two papers. And what the instrument which we are using, which used is the OH air growth suppressors, OHS, and which really need to observe the very faint nebular phase spectrum. And we have one more O5, the W, which are a bit too, day 200, still a bit young, but those three are the spectrum I will show you later. This I showed yesterday, but these are the main investigator in this project, in observations, and Chris Geraldi and Fiesen, and I'm just looking at some plants at the Subaru site. In Subaru observation, we have to be there, not outside. And the reason why the late nebular phase spectrum are very interesting is the following, of course. Early phase, we see only the feature at the photosphere, so we don't see the very most part, and we have to solve the deep transport, so to get the information of the structure very indirectly. But as the ejector becomes the transparent, the lot of gamma rays just starts to escape, and in the extreme end, the all gamma rays emitted by the radio decay of the cobalt, not nickel, escaping, and only positrons energy is trapped locally. So we could see really the feature in the innermost ejector. For that, we have to be waiting until very, very late. And of course, we have to calculate the emission line features based on the realistic ejector models. We have to solve the temperature and these kind of things in the code, which we have been developing. So what we kind of expecting the change time evolution of the features is something like typically like this. So the deflagration models predict the formation of neutron, relatively neutron-rich ion element core inside, and then nickel 56 layer, and then intermediate mass element and unbound layer. And in some models, there is no almost all everything is bound to nickel 56 without it undergoing electron captures. That's, for example, the subchandra models I will show later. And if there are too much unbound material inside, then we expect this kind of configuration. So as the time going on, the spectral feature is evolving like this. And in the end, if we have complete kind of only this nickel cobalt, they emit positrons and the trapped locally, and emission lines are observed from only these regions, we could see the flat top features like this. And if there is no hole, then all features just center peaking. And if you have seen, if you have this kind of configurations, then we have already starting from the flat feature from the early phase. And this is one of the typical the abundance distributions. In these models, the electron capture is going on in the innermost part, so that produce some stable ion peak elements, ion 56, ion 54, nickel 58, and so on. And then radioactive layer is coming. And this is the kind of classical designation models. And in this case, the defloration part is, in this kind of model, rather narrow. So the velocity range is a bit confined to the lower densities. But still, in the defloration part, that produces a nickel hole, composed of the neutron-rich ion peak elements. So there are not too much difference between these two. If you go using a Sub-Chandra Sekhar mass models, in this case, it's designated with mass roughly, in this case, 1.303 solar mass. The central density at the carbon detonations is 2 × 10⁻⁷ gram per cubic centimeter, which is very low. So the when shock is coming from the outer part, then it's easily detonates rather than deflagration. And in any case, the nuclear burning here, that doesn't undergo any electron capture. So it's just nickel is there, so no nickel hole is expected. And the existence of a nickel hole is important. Already noted in this very simple analytic models, if there is no nickel hole exists, lot of gamma rays are trapped in the high density central regions. So even if we fit the rising part, the later decay phase shows model shows a too slow decline rate compared with the observations. But if we take literally the existence of a nickel hole and shift the nickel layer somewhat outside, the decline rate fits very nicely. So to fit the light curve already, we have noticed the importance of those nickel hole in the exploding models. And this is actually what we have got from the Subaru observations with OHS. And this is 0.5 W a day, 200, and this is 0.3 DU, day 300, and this is 0.3 HV, 300, day 400. And the most striking feature is here, this iron 2 emission lines and very, very flat top. And you might also notice this feature is so kind of shifted toward. And O3DU also, still quite noisy, unfortunately, but there's a good hint, a flat top feature. And also, feature looks like shifted blue. O5W does not show any such strong clear flat top peak, but it's not so clear yet. This is just too young or intrinsically showing this central peak. So in principle, we have to wait until much very late when only positrons contribute to excite the line. This is blow up of those features of all three HBs, and this shows the kind of somewhat very flat top features and also blue shift. So we need the hole within the velocity up to 3,000 kilometers per second and so on. Also the shift is also a similar amount of the blue shift is required. Actually, this shows this flatness is in the velocity space. So the full velocity is, of course, 6,000 km per second. And very interestingly, in the paper by Gerardi et al., using the Spitzer telescope, they also get flat top feature is not so clear yet, but from the cobalt lines, this shift on velocity has been kind of very much in agreement with this near-infrared feature. So this agreement is very, very quite confident for this shift, very, very different instruments and completely different wavebands. And the velocity shift, if we can shift by hand, we need a shift about 2600 km per second. So the feature of DU is a bit noisy, but still we suggest this could be also quite a flat top. And also the feature is a bit shifted to blue by 500 km per second. So using the deflagration models, we could make synthetic spectrum to fit the observations, and just take naively, this is the W7 Bose case, and the DD case also is not so different. Basically, in this kind of nickel hole reproduce the observed the flat top features. This is the optical feature. The one question is those flat top features have not been well observed in optical waveband for O3DU, and so only just a hint here. So we have two questions. The flat top feature is clearly, I think, indicates nuclear burning at very high density, not the detonation part, the deflagration part. And the shift in velocity requires some kind of off-center burning. And of course, there has been questions about if blue shift features are the result of dust, effect, the foreground part is extinct. According to Peter Miku, there is one good example which shows the red shift also. So that dust kind of interpretation doesn't work for that. To interpret these features, so we need some kind of aspherical explosion case, but not really the aspherical case. So one idea is just to detonate the outer part, but relatively late in mass. And this is one trial the Masaomi Tanaka has done a year ago, and just detonate the outer layers. By igniting by hand, and so the detonation wave just propagates outward, but didn't come to the other side, so that could produce the velocity shift, which may be consistent with O3DU by the expanding 500 km per second, but very hard to really explain the larger velocity of shift 3,000 km per second. And it's probably interesting to really test, to use the recent 3D models in recent papers shown, and also the Fritz already shown in the talk this morning. And the detonation wave starts here and looks like this, but the detonation wave doesn't propagate to the other side. It's too late to really start This kind of the configuration might be interesting to test, but which you have to do later. Okay. So just the result summary. We did the near-infrared spectroscopic observations for not just 2 and 3. And these two show the flat top AIM profiles. And if you include 05W and 91T, the, these are clearly, 91T clearly shows the peaking features. So about half shows this flat top ion peak, ion line features. So that clearly shows the no radioactive materials formed at the central regions in velocity. And that velocity range should cover up to 3,000 km per second. So that indicates the neutronization is actually taking place at such at quite a high density. And so just simple detonation model also doesn't work to explain these features. And also, if there are some unbound material left in the central regions, and some unbound material is left together with the nickel 56 and so on, but later detonation wave comes to burn unbound material or something like that, then this feature cannot explain. And also, the subchannel secular model is ruled out completely to explain these features. And the blue shift, or red shift of the other examples, suggests the kind of delayed in mass fraction of the ignition of the detonation might explain this shift in the features that we have to do. Thank you very much.
So I rarely advertise our work, but with Dan Kayser, we'll have a paper coming out on validation of those GCD-DoD models. I think what Dan nicely shows in that paper is that there is a large offset in velocity, and that offset is around 3,000 kilometers, so you can get very large offsets in this kind of scenarios. The question, of course, is how you produce those neutronized cores. And that could be, I think, Dawn Lamp is already showing that there is some Y sub E's evolution in that region. I think detonations can do that, provided the rest works nicely too.
You mean the electron capture taking place in detonation?
Right, yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Bob?
There are plenty of optical lines of iron. And if the shift is as big as that, it might have some effect on what you see at late times. Did you also get late time spectra in the optical, and do you see an effect that's consistent?
And the optical spectrum, I briefly showed the not really flat top. So that's probably many lines contribute to the making feature less clear.
But that was, yeah.
And also the other thing, the O3DU, the age is still might be still too young.
Well, I'm just thinking you might have an easier time making the measurements in the iron 2 and iron 3 lines that are at, 5,000 angstroms. And if you have those spectra at the same time, or if somebody else does, it would be very interesting to check.
RTN people have some.
Yeah, we may have some.
Right. Yeah. So, Kim, so basically you are using a central cavity to explain the flat top feature for the near infrared error lines. Does this agree with the explosion models, how to produce this kind of central cavity, like no liquid, no carbon and oxygen?
The central part is that does not related directly to the outermost layer yet. Only we have seen only the central part in the emission, and outer part is completely transparent in those cases. There's no information. And but the overall features of type as a type 1A, people say it's relatively normal type 1A. So the any model we can apply, BD model, deflagration model, GCD, whatever, to explain this feature. But we need a central part to have quite a strongly neutron-rich core.
Yes, Wolfgang.
Just to Bob's question, we have data, early data, late data, nebula data, all in the optical, the early data, all the infrared, near infrared, far infrared. They don't show any peculiarities.
Okay, that, so maybe quite a common event, because two of four, the observational feature shows the part of, so in near infrared. And so anyway. And in near infrared, we have only two lines. Yeah.
Are there other questions? I saw some hands here before. Well, if not, I would like to thank you all very much.